Blog Talk Radio.
Today is the birthday of Martin Van Buren's wife, one of the smallest, shortest men to occupy the presidency. Simon Cameron, he was from Pennsylvania. He was Abraham Lincoln's first Secretary of War, that title later changed to Secretary of Defense. Cameron was incompetent. He was replaced by Edwin Stanton from Ohio, one of the sons of the great Johann Sebastian Bach. Carl Philip Emanuel Bach's birthday. Oliver Wendell Holmes' birthday is today. He died on this day. His birthday was on the 6th, actually. Holmes was from Massachusetts, served in the American Civil War, came from a famous family. He is best known for this misstatement that you can't shout fire in a crowded theater, and he later regretted that statement and is considered a misstatement. There's a famous movie with, forgot the guy's name, he had a big nose, and it came out in 1940. It was about Oliver Wendell Holmes, and Holmes sat on the court till he was about 90. I think he died in about 1940. He served on the court also with William Howard Taft, who was the only man to occupy the presidency and then later became the Chief Justice of the United States. He was also the Governor General of the Philippines after the American Civil War. He was so fat, over 300 pounds, that when he rode a horse, he had to get a plow horse, I guess, to carry him around the Philippines, and was said it was cruelty to the horse. Also, when he occupied the White House, they had to build a special bathtub for his because of his girth. Also, he had cows on the pasture in the White House, quite a man, and he is the founding father of the famous Ohio political family, the Tafts. His son, Robert Taft, was considered for the Republican nomination for president. Never mind, he was known as Mr. Republican, and he was part of the conservative wing of the Republican Party. There are Tafts most recently in Ohio state government today. But I guess, you know, they're not going to get that high again as Chief Justice or President. Great Italian composer, Leon Cavallo, born today. He's probably best known for his Verismo operas, Pagliacci, and Cavalleria Rusticana. the co-discoverer of nuclear fission. He doesn't get much credit. Otto Hahn, his birthday today. And Claire Trevor, a famous actress, Hollywood either changes their name or cuts it to pieces. Her last name was Wemlinger. She was born in New York. Another actress whose name was changed, Sid Reese, famous dancer, born in Amarillo, Texas. This is her real name, Tula Elise Finella, F-I-N-L-E-A. Alan Hovhaness, a great composer. Fritz Reiner did some of his compositions on RCA Victor, the Chicago Symphony, the great Chicago Symphony. Great Hungarian jazz pianist, Gabor Szabor, his birthday today. We had a pope, we had warrior popes like Julius II, a successor to the Borgias, Alexander VI, but in 1144, Celestine II, his name was Guido, he was a pope who died in battle. We don't know much about this character. William III, after the Stuarts were kicked out of England, the British Parliament, English Parliament, invited the Dutch to come over because they were Protestants. William III became King of England, but he came from Holland. Great French composer, Hector Berlioz, his most famous piece is March to the Scaffold, and that's where a lot of these people should go who are involved in political corruption. It used to be our music theme, but I changed it. A great orchestrator, and his works are still played today. The guy who invented the dirigible, Count von Zeppelin, and you'll see a picture of the Zeppelin on this blog talk today, and of course a picture of William Howard Taft, and a great British conductor, great humorist, Sir Thomas Beecham. He learned music on his own. His family started the Beecham Pill company, and even today they're one of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies. He had enough money to start his own orchestra, the Royal Philharmonic, and great recordings, and he had a great sense of humor. When people would cough during a concert, he'd turn around and snap at them, tell them to shut up, and people put up with him. He had a great sense of humor, and later his birthday's in April, and we'll play an interview that we have in our archives. Great war photographer, George Stevens. He did a lot of World War II a film for the War Department, as it was known then. It's now the Defense Department. And a guy who had three heart transplants within 46 hours, and he died, Thomas Creighton. He was a young man, about 33 years old. Among the events today, in 1702, the consort of William III, Queen Anne, she became ruler of England upon the death of William III. And, of course, if Elizabeth II's grandson, Prince William, Charles doesn't take the throne and he abdicates, so he doesn't abdicate, he steps aside for William. It'll be William the Fourth, and that has been the prediction. In 1854, in this date, Commodore Perry made his second trip to Japan. It takes an American to open up things. Also, in 1861, the Merrimack, which was constructed on the hulk of a U.S. Navy ship that was left behind at the beginning of the American Civil War. It was launched, and there was a naval battle off of Hampton Roads, which the Merrimack destroyed a couple of, I think the Cumberland, a couple of U.S. Navy wooden ships until it met the Monitor, which was known as a cheese box on a raft. And we do have a clip from an old movie, an educational clip that I used called Hearts of Something or Other, and we'll play it another day. This is also on this day, Volunteers of America was formed. It's also celebrated as International Women's Day. In 1916, the U.S. invaded Cuba for the third time. Some people think we should invade it again. 1927, Pan Am Airlines was set up by Juan Trippi, and it was always the flag carrier. I always had great service when I flew Pan Am to Australia and in Europe. Excuse me. Russian Revolution started in Petrograd, and we'll play this clip from Leon Trotsky, whose grandnephew was Phil Bronstein, who was the editor of the old San Francisco Hearst Examiner. The family name was Bronstein, and let's see here, where is Leon Trotsky? Here he is. Leon Trotsky, the founder of the Russian Army. Here's one of his speeches.
Esteemed audience, you will easily understand if I begin my short address to you in my very imperfect English by addressing my warm thanks to the Mexican people and to the man who leads them with such merit and courage, President Cardenas. When monstrous and absurd accusations were hurled at me and my family, when my wife and myself were under the lock and key of the Norwegian government, without being able to defend ourselves, the Mexican government opened the doors of his magnificent country and said to us, here, you can freely defend your rights and your honor. Naturally, it is not a sympathy for myself, for my ideas, which have motivated President Cardenas, but a fidelity to his own ideas, all the more meritorious then in his act of democratic hospitality, the rare his days. Stalin's trial against me is built upon false confession, extorted by murder and inquisitorial methods in the interest of the ruling elite. There are no crimes in history more terrible in intention and execution than the Moscow trials of Zinoviev Kamenev and of Pyatakov Radek. His trials developed not from communism, not from socialism, but from Stalinism, that is, from the irresponsible despotism of the bureaucracy over the people. What is now my principal task? To reveal the truth, to show and to demonstrate that the true criminals hide under the cloak of the accusers. What will be the next step in this direction? The creation of an American, an European, and subsequently also an international commission of inquiry, composed of people who incontestably enjoy authority and public consideration. In confidence, I undertake to present to such a commission all my files, thousands of personal and open letters, in which the development of my thoughts and my action is reflected day by day, without any gaps. I have nothing to hide. Dozens of witnesses who are abroad possess invaluable facts and documents which will shed light on the Moscow framework. The work of the Commission of Inquiry must terminate in a Greek counter-trial. A counter-trial is necessary to cleanse the atmosphere of the germs of disease, colonies, fortifications, and frame-ups whose source is Stalin's police, the great P.U., which has fallen to the level of the Nazi Gestapo. Esteemed audience, you may have many varying attitudes toward my ideas and my political activity for 40 years, but an impartial inquiry will confirm that there is not a stain on my honor, both personal and political. Profoundly convinced that the right is on my side, I wholeheartedly salute the citizens of the New World.
You notice that the cock was crowing in the background, or maybe the Trotsky there was talking from his exile in his compound in Mexico, and he was later assassinated by a hitman sent from by Stalin, Mercader, I think that was his name, Mercader, who used an ice pick. He wormed his way into Trotsky's competence. Trotsky had guards, but they didn't see through this guy, and Mercader killed, mortally wounded Trotsky, and Trotsky with this ice pick, and then Trotsky died in the hospital a few days later. Mercado, they didn't have capital punishment in Mexico at the time. This was 1940. Mercado spent about 20 years in prison, And then after he was released, went back to Russia. We don't know if he was ended up in the Lubyanka, which was the KGB's prison, or NKVD. If you went to the Lubyanka, you didn't come out. You came out as a corpse. So we don't know what happened to him. And of course, as I said, his grandnephew later became editor of the San Francisco Hearst's own Examiner. He quit the, and later they bought the San Francisco Chronicle, which was started by two Dutch Jews. And he later left and is working for some so-called investigative entity. Among the other events today, Mahatma Gandhi started his peaceful protests against the occupation of the British in India and the abuses of the Indians. Of course, the British were called the Raj. And, of course, Gandhi, I did interview Gandhi's nephew. We had that interview in our archives. I met him here many years ago. This is an irony. United States Workers Union discovered that, of all things, there was slavery in Liberia. And here, Liberia was set up, started with President Monroe, and then it was, they encouraged, President Lincoln encouraged blacks to go to Liberia, blacks who wanted to get away from slavery. And here, according to this labor union, there was slavery going on in Liberia. It's quite a contradiction. Another black history occurred on this day. In 1945, the first black U.S. black nurse was inducted into the U.S. Navy as an ensign, Philip M. Daly. She's not related to Richard M. Daly of Chicago, who was called the mayor of the most segregated city in North America. Quite all these contradictions. One of the big political military men of the Stalin rule in Russia, Marshal Klement Voroshilov, he was defense minister in the Soviet Union, and he announced on this day that Russia had the bomb. Also, in 1963, and we're seeing these problems with Syria today. Syria was, after the Turks were defeated in World War I, the British and the French had plans to carve up this part of the world. The British got the Saudi Arabia and all these other countries, Aden, which was also used on the Red Sea for the British Navy, and, of course, where all the oil was. The French got Lebanon and Syria. And then in 1963, there was a military coup with the Assad pair, the founding father of this family. And this family still rules, are trying to desperately hang on to that power nearly 40 years later. And, of course, that we hear about all the slaughter and the civil war that's going on in Syria. So it started 40 years ago because of a military coup. In 1965, I remember it well, I was in college, the first U.S. troops, combat troops, Marines, were sent to Vietnam. And then, of course, this was during the Lyndon Baines Johnson administration, and he kept telling them, I want you to bring the coon skin so I can put it on the wall. He increased the troops in South Vietnam, I think, to over 300,000. I lost one of my best buddies over there, my roommate at college, not at college, at boarding school, survivor of the Holocaust, and he was in Air Force Intelligence, and was a victim of Agent Orange, died of cancer. So these are some of the things that happen on this date. Now, next week a week from today will be St. Patrick's Day, and we're going to do our annual, some of the things you didn't know about the Irish and some of the things you don't want to know about the Irish. Some of this is tongue-in-cheek and some of this is fun, and some things about the Irish and their contributions to civilization and their involvement in public corruption, as well as the problems that Irish clergy have created in the Roman Catholic Church. And we hope to have our professional Irishman, Patrick Butler, who has been a political journalist, in Illinois for the last 50 years, and he's half Irish. He also is distantly related to the last ruling family of Russia, the Romanovs, but I think he'll be Irish on next Friday. So also, there's the report from San Francisco Criminal Court, a guy named Boucheret, who is this bicyclist who thought that people should get out of the way of his bicycle or be run over, and he killed a 70-year-old Asian man who was walking across the street on the light in the crosswalk, and this Boucheret reportedly went through two red lights. He didn't obey the rules of the road, and he killed this man, and so he's on. They thought this was the first time that a bicyclist was charged with homicide and being tried in a criminal court, but it isn't. There's a case in Georgia. Ronald Dale, he was 18 years old, because he didn't obey the Georgia rules of the road, he made a turn which a motorist, a woman, tried to avoid hitting him because of his failure to obey the rules of the road. She crashed and died, and Dale was charged with homicide by one of the Georgia's district attorney or state's attorney, as they call them back there. I don't have the update on the case, but this happened before the San Francisco case, and of course we had our lawyer, media types who run in their mouths and exhibiting their ignorance and their failure to research cases. It was easy to find this case. So these are some of the things that go on. And as I've always said to people, having been in the field on and off for 45 years, lawyers are not infallible. They don't know everything. They are not all powerful. Not all lawyers are honest, ethical, and competent. Same thing with doctors. Same thing with your mechanics. You have to look at them individually. And, of course, this is one of the myths. And another myth is you hear a lawyer trying to cover up for his incompetence and insecurity telling you, oh, you're not a lawyer. What do you know? But at the same time, when he's opposing somebody in court, and him and the judge will use this put down, oh, ignorance of the law is no excuse. And and people say, "Well, I'm not a lawyer," but then the judge and then the opposing attorney will hit you with that argument. So as I tell people, ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you. And not only that, some of the best lawyers are behind bars. Some of the worst ones should be. So this is something you should keep in mind, that lawyers are not infallible. They don't know everything. They have to do research or have somebody competent, ethical, and honest to do the research for them. This goes the same. This applies also to investigators. I got this cold, so we're going to end with, oh, I forgot General Berrigan, since I want to play this again, because what he did, he graduated the military academy at West Point, was the deputy commander at Normandy, and he did a lot of sanitary work and military plumbing around the world. He was going to retire in San Francisco. He later did, but he was called to work in Chicago in 1950 to work on the American side of the St. Lawrence Seaway. Now, St. Lawrence Seaway was a project by the governments of Canada and the United States to allow to dredge and widen the St. Lawrence Seaway and permit or allow seagoing ships to come into the Great Lakes and serve the ports in Chicago, Cleveland, Duluth, and Montreal. That was the objective, and he did the American side of the St. Lawrence Seaway. And here's a little interview. It's a longer interview. Here's a clip from that interview.
Oh, I forgot to ask you about your early life, General. In Boston, what kind of background are you from?
Well, almost. My father was a plumbing contractor, plumber.
So it's in your blood.
Came from Ireland. And he did all the plumbing in the Back Bay.
Of Boston.
Of Boston, and Beacon Street and all those places. He put the plumbing in all these fancy houses. I used to go with him before I was a kid. I remember going around with him at these places where he had put in the plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And both my brothers were much older. There were three girls between me and the two oldest brothers. And one of them graduated from MIT. The other one was a natural draftsman.
Oh, here's the shorter clip, and we'll play it right now. Let me pull it up here with my short cold here. Here we go. General Bergen and a chief engineer. Here we go.
I was in San Francisco, and I had 4 years to do. When I thought I was living in this house, and I thought, I'm going to retire in San Francisco. And the chief called me up and said, listen, you got decorated by England, France, and Belgium. I have another international job. I said, what is it? And he says, it's the Niagara Falls, really.
Okay.
And he says, it's the job with Canada. And I want you to go take over the division in Chicago. See, I had the division here that included districts in San Francisco. Now the divisions in Chicago included the Great Lakes, the district in Chicago and Buffalo, and another district up the north, somewhere.
Northeast.
Northwest, you know, Lake Superior. And it was a very interesting job of remodeling Niagara Falls, the Canadians.
Were they easy to work with?
Oh, terrific. And we both had the same idea. You see, that the international boundary goes right through Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And the falls had all the water going, practically 85% of the water went through the middle quarter of the falls where the international boundary went across. And what we did was to both go on our side of the international boundary and flatten that. We sandbagged so we got away from the water, but we made the elevation of the edge of where the water would go as the same as the elevation in the middle of the horseshoe. So that we spread the thing about so that Niagara Falls was maybe instead of a quarter of a mile in the middle of the falls, it was 2 or 3 miles long. And that particularly made it very pretty, beautiful. In other words, and we actually generated more power. In other words, we put more power through the powerhouse because all that water is going through the middle of the falls. And for the show, you couldn't divert much more than they were diverting, whereas if you spread it out for a little bit of water, maybe only 6 inches of water going over the edge, and then diverting more for power, making equal amount of power on the Canadian and the United States side. It was
so for once, everything got shared.
It had to be that way. In other words, it was very logical that we wanted it to be that way. It was a fair thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I can get on an environmental thing, General, with the ships, foreign ships coming into through the St. Lawrence Seaway into the Great Lakes, they bring in bacteria and plant life that's not indigenous to the continental United States, and I understand the problems now. Could that have been avoided?
I don't think that's a good thing. It was a different problem from what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the problem of the health department. In that
of course, we weren't that environmentally conscious then, were we?
Well, it wasn't our responsibility. That was mm-hmm. something that was the public health department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because this is just starting to crop up in being from the Midwest myself, these Russian ships especially, they said, brought in stuff that was not, indigenous to the United States, and now they're concerned that these animals will get a foothold here. What did you do after the seaway?
Well, that's only part of an hour-long interview. General Berrigan is dead and is buried in, I believe, the Presidio. He's not buried in West Point. Well, and with our usual politics and poker, and next week will be our annual trashing with tongue-in-cheek of the Irish. So here is something, and a lot of Irish engage in this.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
King two. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, how to bet,
when to call up.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trades, good as gold.
Well, we'll be back Monday at 4 p.m., and it'll be Trash the Irish Week. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Have a warm weekend. Stay safe.